When you're a college student, getting your studies done, getting your degree, ought to be your top priority, right? Professor Alex Chediak says, not exactly.
Everything that we do in college should be the fruit of our walk with Christ. Our academics shouldn't be, hey, I want to get straight A's so that I can get $100,000 when I get out of here. That's not a Christian motivation. The Christian motivation is I want to honor God with my brain. So a godly motivation in the classroom, a godly motivation for finding friends, a godly motivation for using recreation times. I want to develop the gifts he's given me so that I can be prepared to serve him in whatever profession he calls me.
This is Family Life Today. Our host is the president of Family Life, Dennis Rainey, and I'm Bob Lapine. What can we do as parents to make sure that our sons and daughters are headed off to college this fall with the right perspective in mind? We're going to talk about that today. Stay tuned. And welcome to Family Life Today. Thanks for joining us. When you and Barbara, a number of years ago, wrote a book for parents of teenagers, one of the key themes you addressed with those parents was the idea that your sons and daughters are walking through a minefield as they go through the teen years, that there are traps set for them all the way through their adolescent years. Mm-hmm. When a student goes off to college, there are some big bear traps that are laid on the college campus for that student that can be life determinative for that young man or that young woman.
That's right. Their spiritual life is in play. Their moral life is in play. Some of the habits developed in college, like alcohol, can mm-hmm. set a course for their lives. And we're going to talk about all three of those issues with the author of Thriving at College, Alex Chediak.
Thank you, sir.
Welcome to the broadcast, Alex.
Thanks for having me, Dennis.
Alex is an associate professor of engineering and physics. And Alex, why don't you just give Bob a sample question around physics? Because we've really tried to stump Bob. I think we may have found the subject.
If I was taking a final in your class, what would one of the questions be, for example?
So I might have like an inclined plane and a block on it.
Right.
With a rope holding it up.
Yeah.
And a pulley and another block, and then one block's heavier than the other. So
right.
It's kind of falling. The block that's heavier is falling.
Falling,
the other
yeah.
one's going up the incline plane.
I'm getting this, yeah.
Find the acceleration of the system.
The acceleration of the system.
And the answer is, the only term that Bob knows is
is fulcrum.
Fulcrum.
There is a fulcrum at play, isn't there?
Is that the answer to the question?
Not really, no. that might get you half a point, though. I'll give you something.
All right, good.
Well, we'll leave that subject. Alex is an author, a speaker. He and his wife, Marnie, have three children. They live in Riverside, California. And he is a professor at California Baptist University. And let's talk about spiritual life. One of the things you write about in your book is that 24% of all professors on the mm-hmm. college campus profess to be...
Secular university campus.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
Profess to be atheists.
Or agnostics.
And the national average on this?
About 4%.
So a higher than average percentage.
Six times greater. And it actually gets even higher if you go to the more elite schools, like a Berkeley or a Stanford or Yale or MIT or... The more elite the university in terms of its reputation, the higher the percentage.
So is that the idea that the smarter you get, the more atheistic or agnostic? I mean, it's
the
kind of an
interesting...
The more
foolish you get, right?
Yeah, pretty interesting correlation there.
Well, it probably also says something about discrimination and kind of a one-track mind in higher education. In secular higher education, there is pressure to believe in that there's no such thing as absolute truth, or that any kind of religious framework that would tell you how to live or tell someone else how to live is faulty.
Well, part of having a liberal education mm-hmm. is the idea that you're open to all kinds of different ideas, that you haven't locked in on anything dogmatically except maybe in the sciences and in mathematics, right?
Right. And that's one of the things I talk about is one of the things we hear as Christians in our culture is that we're supposed to be tolerant. And what tolerant is supposedly means, according to our world, is that what's true for you is true for you, and what's true for me is true for me, even though they're totally contradictory. There is no such thing as absolute truth or objective truth that would somehow have bearing on your life and mine. But if you think about what the word tolerance has historically meant, what it's meant is being tolerant or gracious or accepting of somebody who is different than you. So let's suppose I have a friend who is a Muslim. Being tolerant would be saying, okay, I think your faith is incorrect. I think Jesus Christ is the way of God, but I'm still going to love you, respect you, be kind towards you, be able to work on my homework, my math homework with you, but I still think you're wrong, and you, of course, think that I'm wrong. This is true tolerance, is holding a belief and yet not killing other people over it. Mm-hmm. What our world says is tolerant is, no, you're not even allowed to think I'm wrong. If you think I'm wrong, that's just true for you. And it's what's true for me is true for me. That's not tolerance at all. Mm-hmm.
You went to the University of California at Berkeley.
I did.
That's not exactly
Go
known
Bears.
As... yeah, we'll allow for that advertisement.
We'll allow for that advertisement. We lose at football to the South all the time. I don't know why.
There is a reason.
Is there? Okay.
None of them take physics.
In the South. That's right.
You went to the university, though, in Berkeley.
Yes.
You were a Christian.
Yes.
How did you survive that?
Well, you know, I think it's just about going there and having the standpoint of I am here to grow in my profession, but also to grow in my faith, and I'm going to identify myself with God's people. So I think finding a good church, identifying yourself as a Christian from day one, saying I'm here, I'm a Christian, I'm going to find a church to plug into, I'm going to find other Christians on campus that I can connect with and commiserate with and go through life together with and just share our common experience with.
Would you say your spiritual foundation was really solid and locked in before you got to Berkeley?
You know, I think it was. I was a graduate student as well, so it's a little bit older. So it's not exactly a one-for-one correspondence. I went to an undergraduate school, also a secular school, called Alfred University. And there I was, it was a non-Christian school. I was less grounded in my faith at that time. But I was grounded enough to know, you know what, I better find the church pretty quickly, and I better find other Christians on campus pretty quickly. If you don't do those two things within the first couple of months, the data is not very promising.
Well, and I have to tell you, when I've been on college visits with my sons and my daughters over the years, walk through the dorms. One of the things I'm looking for on the dorm bulletin boards as we get the tour of the dorms are the posters about Bible study going on here or about campus ministry meeting here or what's going on.
Right.
If I don't see that stuff, and I remember being at one very prestigious university and walking through the dorms and seeing nothing that indicated anything spiritual. And I asked our tour guide, I said, are there any campus ministries on this campus?
Yeah.
And she said, I think there's one InterVarsity something. And so I checked online.
Yeah.
I called the head of InterVarsity and I said, tell me about what's going on. She said, well, there are four of us who meet right now and we're trying to figure out how to get it bigger. But I thought,
that doesn't sound promising.
I'm thinking, this is a great college. This would be a great place to get a degree from.
Right.
But I don't know how my son or daughter would survive spiritually in that kind of an environment.
Yeah, you don't want to send your son or daughter off to a place where they're going to lose their faith while they gain professional excellence.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a niece who is going to Texas A&M, mm-hmm. and I went to her graduation and had a chance to kind of put my arm around her at one point, and I said, now, when you get there as a freshman in a few months, mm-hmm. I want you to look up this group called Breakaway.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Breakaway meets at your basketball arena. It's a Bible study. It's a pretty good size little Bible study. It has 5, 6, 7, 10,000 kids going to it.
That's a lot of people.
Her eyes got really big. And another young man who was there said, what did you call that? He said, I'd like to know about that. And I just want to underscore what you said here, Alex, because I think one of the things that saved me as a young person going to a larger university after I'd been to a junior college was when I arrived on campus, and this was back in the days when 8,000 to 10,000 students was a big college campus back then.
Yeah.
I arrived and immediately found a church, and I also got involved in Campus Crusade for Christ.
Exactly.
Those two in tandem
were
a great combo in terms of finding people to identify with and to be able to withstand some of the attacks on my faith.
Absolutely right. I think you, even before you choose a college, having a game plan of saying, I'm going to go to this school, and when I get there, I'm going to consider these churches and these Christian organizations. Now with the internet, there's no reason why that can't be done in advance. So like Bob was talking about, when you're looking at a college, you can even know then, hey, this school has these opportunities to grow in my faith. And if the school has nothing, then you're right. Why get a world-class education and let your spiritual life shrivel up over 4 years. That's not worth it.
And a parent can't presume that because they're sending a son or a daughter to a Christian college,
right,
that that's going to ensure that the spiritual life is going to stay intact.
Unless it's Cal Baptist University.
Is it guaranteed there?
It is guaranteed, yeah. It's part of your tuition payment. No. You're absolutely right. And in fact, the people that you're going to meet there, they may be there because their parents are forcing them to go to a Christian school. And they're as non-Christian as anyone else, and they're just waiting for the chance to get away from mom and dad's watchful eye, and then they're going to start showing their true colors.
Mm-hmm.
So absolutely right. You can't assume that your classmates, even at a Christian school, are going to share your faith perspective. In fact, some of the Christian schools, your faculty may not be as committed to Christ as you might hope.
There's one other thing we haven't talked about here is parents launch their arrows toward college.
Yeah.
And as we talk about attempting to ensure their children's spiritual growth, which we've laughed about, but there are no guarantees.
There's no guarantees.
Your son or daughter is going to have to hammer out his or her faith right out there on their own.
Right.
And I'm not encouraging parents to be overly controlling or certainly manipulative, mm-hmm. but I would find a sharp young man
mm-hmm.
or a sharp young lady
mm-hmm.
to befriend my daughter if she was going to college
mm-hmm.
and to seek her out in the first couple of weeks at the school. And it would be a young lady who has the qualities you're thinking of.
About I want my daughter to have in 2 years.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
and someone whose head is screwed on straight. I know for a fact, and this is going to sound kind of funny, but my daughter was really used by God in a young man's life as he arrived on campus early on at the University of Arkansas. And he is on fire for Jesus Christ today, I think in part because Laura intercepted him
mm-hmm.
as he was forming his friendships and he was just teetering.
Yeah, between...
He made some choices to go with some of the guys, and that could have spun him off into all kinds of stuff. But instead, she got him involved in CRU, Campus Crusades College Ministry,
right.
And man, it clicked for him. He went on a summer project. His faith was energized. He was pressing back against the culture on the college campus.
Right.
And those are important relationships and friendships as a young man or a young lady starts their college experience.
Absolutely. I mean, the difference between a freshman and a junior, even though it's only 2 years, it's substantial. A freshman will look up to a junior almost like a father figure, because a freshman in a big university environment, like the University of Arkansas, is like a fish out of water. They're trying to figure out what to do, where to go, and a junior knows the ropes. So even though they're only 2 years older, the degree to which that mentoring relationship can naturally develop is substantial. Even if it's a short mentoring relationship where they just kind of help them at a critical stage to get in the right group, that is a huge plus.
So if you're a freshman and you haven't really had a chance to meet a whole lot of people, because in classes, you're not going to meet friends, you're not going to build relationships typically, because it's just more of a lecture style. Somebody comes to you and says, hey, there's a big group of us going over to, on 15th Street, where I went to college, the place was called the Tap Room. Big group of us going over to the Tap Room tonight.
Right.
Uh-huh. Is that tap dancing?
That was not tap dancing.
No, there was kinds of tap.
Something else on tap over there. And they said, do you want to come along? And you think, well, I would like to get to meet some people. I'd like to get to know some guys.
Need to have another option.
But this is one of those areas where some kids are just waiting for the chance to do they card you over there? No, they don't card you over there. Well, let's go, you know?
Right.
How do you prepare a son or a daughter for what they're going to experience in terms of pressure to drink when they get to college?
I think just honestly talking about it. I mean, one of the things I think teens hunger for from their parents is honest dialogue about the faith, and to have their parents share with them, look, these are the struggles of young adult life, and to be very real and frank with them. A lot of teens, I find, are more eager to talk to those kinds of things, sexuality, alcohol, drugs. They're more eager to talk to mom and dad than sometimes the mom and dad are. They're more hungry for their parents' involvement in those areas of their life than sometimes the parents are uncomfortable or feeling bashful about bringing up sensitive topics. So I think just honest dialogue about, hey, these are the things that happen at college. Perhaps if a parent struggled in that area and they sinned in those ways in college, just be honest, hey, I blew it in this way in college, and this is how God's led me out of that, and this is what I paid for that. These are the consequences that I reaped. this will not go well for you if you go that way. For me, one of the things I did that I thought was really helpful when I went to Alfred was I had some Christian friends that I already knew were there. Mm-hmm. It was a small school, only about 2,500. So the number of Christians, you know, wasn't going to be in the thousands like what you were talking about, Dennis, earlier. But it was, you know, 40, 50. So I knew 5 or 10 of them before I went. So at least I had, okay, these are people that I can kind of get together with and hang out with and develop friendships through them and not feel like I have to be a part of the party scene. I think what you're talking about earlier, Bob, is sometimes a freshman feels, hey, if I'm going to ever get to know anybody, I better go to the pub. That's right. The only place that's the only social outlet I possibly have. Well, that's not the only opportunity. You just have to become aware of what the other outlets are.
And I think we got to be careful as we talk to our students that we don't simply say, look, here's what can happen if you do go out drinking. Here are some consequences you can experience. I think we have to point them back to their relationship with Christ, presuming they have one,
right,
and talk about living a life that honors Christ, so that their motivation is not purely to avoid consequences, but their motivation really is to live in a way that's Christ-honoring.
Yeah, so that we're not saying the message, hey, if you drink a beer, you're going to throw your faith away.
Right.
It's not about don't have alcohol for the sake of alcohol. It's that realize that in the alcohol scene, there's another worldview that they're putting on you, and that's drunkenness is encouraged because it gives you a new experience, and this is what they're going for. This is the kind of way of socializing.
And a college student can hear, well, if you get drunk, here are going to be the consequences, and they get drunk a couple of times, and they go, I didn't have those consequences, therefore I've figured out how to do it.
Right.
I've figured out how to make it work. Well, you got to pull back and again say, what's happening with your relationship with Christ? Is Christ honored by your behavior? How do you deal with Scripture on this? That kind of, again, pointing them back to that as the central. So it's not simply a pragmatic warning, but it's a rooted warning.
Yeah, one of the things I talk about in thriving at college quite a bit is that everything that we do in college should be the fruit of our walk with Christ. Our academics shouldn't be, hey, I want to get straight A's so that I can get $100,000 when I get out of here. That's not a Christian motivation. The Christian motivation is I want to honor God with my brain. I want to develop the intellectual gifts he's given me so that I can be prepared to serve him in whatever profession he calls me. So a godly motivation in the classroom, a godly motivation for finding friends, a godly motivation for using recreation times. So that would be an example there is how does getting drunk on a Friday night help me grow in my walk with the Lord? It doesn't, right? So that's the reason.
One of the things that Barbara and I wrote about in our book, Parenting Today's Adolescent, was the principle of Daniel, how he made up his mind in advance.
Not to defile. Right?
Yeah. He knew what his convictions were before he faced the issue.
Right.
And I think there's the issue of drinking. There's also the issue of sex.
Yes.
And we all know what's taking place on the college campus today. There are no hours. Guys and gals can hang out in one another's rooms.
Sometimes they have the same bathrooms at some secular universities. They have a co-ed bathroom system sometimes.
Yeah, and so you have to prepare your sons and daughters to know how to move from the controlled environment of home, where there are expectations and standards, to anything goes. In fact, most things are promoted at the college campus. What's the best advice a parent can give their child concerning these matters?
Four key principles, I think. Number one, our God-given desire for intimacy, for physical and emotional intimacy, it's God-given. In other words, a 17-year-old young man shouldn't be ashamed of his sex drive. That should not be a shameful thing. It's God-given in order to drive him ultimately to a lifelong partner in marriage. Secondly, we get into trouble when we seek the benefits of marriage, sexual intercourse, apart from the associated cost of permanent commitment. God intended them to go together. So In a marriage, that's the only place that God made us to be intimate. That's where we're going to be able to safely enjoy it. Third thing is the purpose of one-on-one dating, of getting to know a great guy or a great gal, is to see if the two should eventually marry. Take away that overarching long-term goal and purpose from the relationship, and basically you run into problems because in some way one of them is using the other, or you're basically mutually using one another, looking for companionship, but apart from any purpose to it. The purpose is preparing for marriage and seeing whether the two should marry. And the fourth principle is the best way to really prepare for that relationship with a godly guy or girl is to become a very godly man or woman yourself. That way you can best be able to attract somebody who has your same values. The main thing we're seeing, I think, is the problem on university campuses is this idea that we can separate emotional intimacy, from physical intimacy, yep. from commitment.
Yep.
All three. So mm-hmm. on the one hand, you see the hookup scene and the dangers of the hookup scene, which is really an idea that I can have a physical relationship with somebody for whom I have no emotional connection. So there's no emotional heartbreak, because all it is the physical act. I'm like a dog going in and coming out, and that's it. It's all all sex is like two dogs. Well, that's not how God made us. So mm-hmm. the way God made us to be physical, emotional, spiritual beings all together, which is why the hookup scene is filled with heartache, heartbreak, misunderstanding, confusion, depression, anxiety. So that doesn't work. On the other hand, you're seeing the opposite. Sometimes you see is a guy and girl saying, hey, we're just going to be best friends. Let's hang out all the time, and nothing's going to get romantic. We're just going to be, quote-unquote, platonic. It's the platonic relationship. All emotional, no physical. And then they're surprised when one of them falls for the other, because God didn't make us to be part physical, part emotional. The emotional and physical come together. In a marriage, you see a husband and a wife enjoying both physical and emotional intimacy. One promotes the other. The relationship gets better and better sexually and emotionally as they know each other more, have more shared experiences, and their hearts are bound together in the commitment of marriage and over the time of the marriage. So I think young people have to have a high view of marriage, first of all, that God has ordained marriage to satisfy my longing for that level of intimacy, and then to associate the dating activity with that as the purpose, is to find out whether this would be God would have us marry. I want to become the kind of person that's going to be a godly husband or a godly wife. I want to meet somebody that's high quality, and I want to move towards that relationship in a way that honors God. By recognizing that God made the physical and the emotional, that intimacy goes together.
And as parents, we have the assignment of preparing our sons and daughters to make these choices in advance of facing the issue, whether it's sex outside of marriage, drinking, their own Christian faith, and how they're going to feed their faith long haul. And and Alex, I really appreciate the work you've done on your book, Thriving at College. It really is a great companion to a new resource we've created here at Family Life called College Ready. And it's a DVD series to prepare graduating high school seniors or incoming college freshmen to go to college on purpose and have a game plan in advance so that the next 4 or 5 years are not just lived out without intentionality, but they're purposeful about friendships, about dating, about their own Christian growth. And that's what you're encouraging parents to do in this book, Thriving at College. And I just appreciate you and your heart for students, and pray God's favor on you as you continue to invest in the next generation.
Thanks for having me, Dennis. Appreciate it.
You know, these two resources really they fit well together. And I'm thinking of parents who are looking right now and going, well, we're sending our son or our daughter off to college here in a couple of weeks. It's too late.
No, it didn't. It can be done.
Now's the time, because now your son or daughter is thinking this is happening. I mean, I remember at my own high school, I didn't think college was happening until the week before. That's when you start packing up the car. All of a sudden, now it's real. So now they're more teachable than they ever were. So it's happening.
And here's the thing. I would rather a son or daughter go through this material prior to facing the issue rather than playing defense.
Right.
In another 6 weeks, 8 weeks,
you're on defense. 3 months. Yeah.
And I'm telling you, they can move from an offensive position to defensive very quickly at college.
Well, right. If you go online at familylifetoday.com, you'll find the information you need about Alex's book, which is called Thriving at College, which you simply pass along to your son or your daughter as they head off to college. And there's the information about the College Ready video series, which you can watch together with your son or daughter and go through the workbook that comes with it. And the student fills out a map that charts what they want their college experience to look like. You can do that just as a family, or if you want to get some other families together, if your son knows who his roommate's going to be, your daughter's a part of a group that's all going off to the same school, or maybe they're going to different schools, invite them over and everybody go through the College Ready material. Again, find out more about both of these resources, Alex Chediak's book, Thriving at College, and the College Ready DVD series. Go to familylifetoday.com for more information. It's familylifetoday.com, or call us toll-free at 1-800-FL-TODAY. That's 1-800-358-6329, 1-800-F as in family, L as in life, and then the word today. Now, tomorrow we're going to talk about the first months of marriage, or maybe the first couple of years, that time in a marriage when we have to make the sometimes challenging adjustments to the differences that we're blending together as husband and wife. Jess McCallum is going to join us to talk about, from a man's perspective, how you do that as a new husband. He's got some special advice for men. I hope you can tune in for that. I want to thank our engineer today, Keith Lynch, and our entire broadcast production team. On behalf of our host, Dennis Rainey, I'm Bob Lapine. We will see you back next time for another edition of Family Life Today. Family Life Today is a production of Family Life of Little Rock, Arkansas. Help for today, hope for tomorrow.